Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, a Toyota Yaris GRMN Special Edition. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
Shall we get one thing out of the way before we go any further in this?
Yes, do.
Impartiality.
Do we have any?
No, there is absolutely none in this. So let's not pretend that there's going to be any impartiality in this at all.
And why is that, Alan? Please make it clear to the fine ladies and gentlemen that are listening to the show.
Because I have one on order. I have had one on order for many months. They have some of my money, and I will be collecting it at some point, as yet unset, on this date, the 20th of January.
Okay.
Okay? Yep. So, please be aware, all the way through this, I'm not even going to pretend that this is the most impartial road test launch visit ever. Okay? Just sort of get that out there.
No, it needs to be said, and I'm glad you've been very clear and upfront.
Shall I move into the next stage of jalopnikism when it comes to total disclosure?
Go on then.
Toyota wanted me to try this car so much they flew me to Barcelona at their expense to spend a nice night in a hotel and then spend a day driving it and then fly back again. There you go.
Because that was the only place in Europe you could do that.
It was. But, yes and no.
Because you'd gone all this way to be with grown-up real journalists.
Well, there was that, yes. Yes, but what I was actually going to say was I had something over many of the grown-up real journalists than anyone else that was there, and I'd actually driven the car before, which I do realise, as I'm saying that, isn't quite true, because some had driven it at the Nürburgring previously. Okay. They'd driven prototypes at the Nürburgring. Similarly, I had driven, along with other prospective new buyers at the time. Of course, we talked about it before. There's videos on our YouTube channel. I had driven it before at Silverstone, on the Stowe Circuit at Silverstone. Yep. Very, very different from the day, because the Stowe Circuit is very short, very wiggly, and also very flat. So this was a fantastic opportunity to drive the car somewhere else.
Excellent. So go on then. What was the makeup of this day then?
So we went out. We went out the day before. Stayed in Barcelona. It's a terrible place to end up in January.
Yes. No. Let's think. Why have they picked there?
It was not that it was very warm.
Was this the UK's office decision?
No.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
No, all these things are set by Europe. You cannot blame the UK. No.
So blame, in inverted commas.
Yes, in inverted commas. Please don't blame them for too much. There's that impartiality again, isn't it? so we went out, stayed over the night before, and then first thing in the morning, some of us did it in this order. We went off, fetched the cars from outside the hotel, drove up to Parc Motor, which is just outside Barcelona, maybe 60 kilometres or so away.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a racetrack, but it is a track. So there's no grandstands or anything, and there's no viewing area.
Right.
It is a track. They seem to have a tiny little sort of auto test one, track, as well as the sort of main one that we were on, which is this... I don't even know if you can describe it as a test track, but it's more like a sort of Gran Turismo-style track.
Closed circuit.
Closed circuit, winds its way up and around the hillside. It's. Do you know what was really cool and what chuffed me to bits about it is that it actually has a crossover. So there is a place where there's a bridge that the track passes over the track itself.
Oh, did you have a little timer over the top of it
so that you could tell
if you were beating people?
Sadly, no. Or thankfully, no. Otherwise, I would have been beaten soundly because I'm not a great track driver. So, yeah, out to there, spot a lunch, and then on for an afternoon's driving up above Barcelona, around Montserrat. Aren't these wonderful? Again... as I said, went to Madrid for Lexus. Fantastically smooth Spanish roads up and around there. Actually, if you follow Matteo Licata at roadster_life, then he sometimes posts pictures on Twitter of going out with the MX5 club on exactly those same roads.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely right. Gorgeous. Lots of browny, orangey, weird-shaped hills. It's a wind shaped hills and blue skies, despite the fact that it was 4 to 5 degrees. And actually, as I arrived at Parc Motor, the ice warning came on in the car.
Oh, bless you.
I know, it was awful.
At some point, obviously, people talked to you to explain.
Well, yeah, when we were at the track, then we got a little bit of a presentation when we arrived there. We had the Japanese sort of program leader was there, and he gave a little talk. But as well as that, we got a talk from a chap called Stan Peters, whom I've mentioned before. And what we'll do is we're going to talk a little bit about the car, and then we'll include an interview that I recorded with him when we were there.
Yep.
So So that's the plan for the rest of the podcast, as well as the rest as how the day went as well.
Okay, so you've got hold of the car, you've driven it on actual roads.
Yeah,
up to the track.
Yeah, which was great because it gave us a little bit of rush hour sort of is it Autostrada in Spain? I'm still not sure. It's not somewhere I visit very often.
So you got a real world feel of, you know, is the clutch pedal massively heavy? Is the steering? But you know, can I use this every day?
Yeah. So you've got to remember everything else I'm going to talk about when I talk about the specific GRMN-ness, and I'll explain what GRMN is in a moment. Then you've also got to remember that the full Toyota design book had to be adhered to in all of this as well. So all the standard, you know, clutch weight, pedal spacings, ability for little people and big people to be able to fit in the cars, all of that standard stuff had to be adhered to whenever they were developing this special edition.
Okay. Was that just because it's Toyota, or was that partly because of cost, do you think?
Yes. I think it was both.
All of it.
All of it. And we'll talk a little bit more about that, about how it's built shortly. But I think there's a certain amount of because it's Toyota-ness.
Okay, cool. Yeah. Okay, you said before you're going to explain what GRMN meant. So I'm trying very hard in this one not to mock the name, because this is a proper... This is the proper one.
Yes, or I'll throw your microphone.
This is not me
you.
Taking the mickey out of you and what you're choosing
to
buy.
You can do that plenty later. Of other times. Loads more opportunities.
I'm going to pretend to be professional here.
Yeah, yes. He says, taking a sip of his beer. So let's try and start from first principles on this. So GRMN stands for Gazoo Racing Tuned by the Meisters of the Nürburgring.
I can see why they shortened it.
You can see why they shortened it. So let's begin with sort of what do the bits of that mean then?
So Gazoo.
Yeah.
Were they the lot that took a CHR round the Nürburgring 12-hour or whatever?
Nürburgring 12-hour, yeah. Yes, they were. So Gazoo Racing.
So they're lunatics then?
You may very well say I couldn't possibly comment.
Or people who like pushing boundaries.
They are. So Gazoo Racing is the common branding for all of Toyota's competition activities these days.
Okay.
So they used to have people like Toyota Team Europe, who ran, amongst other things, the Toyota Formula One team. They've been doing endurance racing for a long time. In the past, they had a separate arm, which kind of almost became TTE, which ran the rallying. Mm-hmm. In the past, and all of these different bits and pieces that they've done, because they've done everything. They've done Le Mans, they've done Le Mans prototypes. They've done the race, the various races at the Nürburgring, the 24 and 12 hours and stuff. They've done rallying, Formula One, everything in between. All of those used to be kind of disparate little arms. You know, right arm didn't really know what the left arm was doing, didn't really care. They've all been grouped together under Gazoo Racing.
So now it can be a consistent message.
Yes.
Looking at it from a business point of view, there's a consistent message.
Yes.
Which all links clearly back into the Toyota Corporation and the stuff they're developing for us mere mortals as well.
Yeah. Yeah, and a certain amount of this comes right from the top. You know, I've spoken about Akio Toyoda before. I think he's a really, really cool guy.
He likes a car.
He likes a car. His thing was, you know, at the age of 50-something, he decided that he was going to go and become a GT car driver and race at the Nürburgring. And everybody said, you're crazy. And he said, yeah, but if I put my mind to it, I can do it. And he's saying that it has helped him when it comes to development of Toyota cars. As well, generally, and particularly when it comes to the faster ones and the
well, I'm all for if this is going to help make a lot of exciting Toyotas out there, then mm-hmm. I'm all for it. And I'm happy that he went off to go and learn
now when you
GT
when you,
driving.
Now, when you say a lot, so that's where it is. The Meister Nürburgring, they have Toyota have a base near the Nürburgring, Voskert base, Gizzi Racing have a place in Cologne as well, which used to be the Formula One base, which is why one of the reasons why they're going off on a tangent as usual. One of the reasons why their Yaris WRC car is quite as nuts looking, and that's me being polite, as it is because they're the ones who happen to have the Formula One wind tunnel. They've got an F1 standard wind tunnel from their days at F1. So
that's why the rear or the aero package is quite as aero-y as it is.
Well, yes. And we'll talk, we're talking a little bit about the GRMN, but even on that, the rear spoiler on that is intended to develop downforce at higher speeds. It does develop downforce. It's not just there for prettiness. And that gives a pretty good indication of what the rest of the car is like and the amount of thought that's gone into that.
Okay.
Okay. So that's Gazoo Racing. Meister Nürburgring's because they do so much development stuff there, so much racing there. That's where that bit comes in. And the Yaris GRMN is, and the wording from Toyota is, it's a statement of intent for the brand in Europe.
What sort of? When they say a statement, what do they mean? Look, we are taking performance seriously.
Yes.
Okay. This is not,
that's it.
Again, similar to conversations we've had recently in other podcasts, this is not a marketing ploy where they've thrown some stickers on the side of a car and breathed a little bit on it and gone, oh, this is a little bit quicker, okay. Aren't we racy?
I think that a certain amount of it is, if you want my opinion, I think a certain amount of this is marketing. Everybody goes on, I'm sorry. There have been many reviews out since the day that we all spent there.
Mm.
Most of the people that wrote the reviews spent there, and a lot of them have mentioned the price. So let's get that out of the way now. It's £26,250 for a Yaris. Okay, little tiny hatchback.
Okay. Right. Yes.
Okay. Okay. I do not see, and we'll explain the different bits and pieces and all that stuff coming up, I do not see how they're making any money on that whatsoever. I cannot believe they're making money.
Well,
they must be running.
Explain how many cars we're talking as well.
Well, that's it, because there's a lot of work has gone into this, and you'll hear most of that in the interview.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, a lot of work going into this for not that many cars. So, all in all, they are going to be making 600 cars in basically this spec. Let me explain why I'm saying basically. It's because that 600 includes 200 cars for Japan, which will be the WITZ GRMN.
Okay.
Okay. So discounting those, because their specifications might be slightly different because they've got to match up with being a WITZ and stuff. So I imagine aesthetics are a bit different, badging and that kind of thing. The rest, the other 400 are for Europe. And they'll be sold individually numbered in Europe.
So nothing for America?
Nothing for America.
Okay.
Not America at all. About 80 to 100-ish. Nobody's quite sure and nobody's prepared to commit to a number. Are coming to the UK.
Okay.
Okay. Every single one of those 400 were initially reserved within 72 hours of the car being made available online.
That's quite impressive from a company that hasn't really done performance for a while.
This is very, very true.
So there must be a core bunch of people who pay attention to this sort of thing, let alone be fans.
Yes, I think that that's very, very true, very fair. Yeah. And all of the ones for sale, certainly here in the UK, are all already taken. As in, Toyota GB will be left with, I don't know if they're keeping one. I would imagine they're keeping one or two. I'd imagine they're keeping one for the Heritage Fleet. Be crazy if they didn't, guys. Mm-hmm. Guys, you are, aren't you?
then answers on a postcard, too.
Two, yes. Care of Scott Brownlee. Yeah, they're all spoken for, and it's the we've each put down a deposit, and as we did initially up until the Silverstone day, when that got returned. It's been quite a complicated sales process. I've actually missed the sales process out of my notes. It's worth mentioning.
Yeah, because I've read some of the bump because
it's you been thrust around, it at me. Yeah.
So I thought it would be rude not to. But it was interesting to hear why they did it in the manner they did. So if you could explain the manner they did and then why they did it.
Okay, I'm not so certain about the second half, but I'll definitely do the first half. So initially these were released online. I broke off a conference call to reserve mine in a sort of, I don't know how long these are going to hang around here, mate. Can you just hold on whilst I try and reset the password for my Toyota account, which hadn't been used for about more than 10 years, until I then put down £1,000 deposit, because that was it. That's what the deposit amount was in that initial session. And that was it. And that was, we could have that back at any point. It was there. It was our statement of intent, but we could get that back.
And how long ago was that?
September.
Okay.
August, September. It was really bad. It was the day after payday. Mortgage payment hadn't come out yet. It was just such awful timing for me. No, it was great timing. I don't know if it was on purpose or not. I suspect it wasn't, judging by the reaction from people at Toyota whenever I've told them that.
So it was done the back end of the summer.
Yeah, back end of summer. November we
this
got...
This was before anyone could see a proper car.
Oh yeah, that was before could see a proper car. So we'd seen pictures.
You were putting money down, or people who were putting this initial deposit down were putting it down on the idea.
That's not 100% certain.
Of this.
That's not 100% true. Because I had seen the prototype pretty one at Geneva.
Okay. All right, okay.
Okay.
So there was an indication of what it would look like.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was pretty much finished. They had the wrong brand of tyres on. Is the only difference I can tell so far.
Okay, right, okay.
So there was a prototype aesthetic one at Geneva, which I saw because I went to Geneva.
Yeah.
Not because I'm a normal person.
Okay. Well, we know you're not a normal person.
Yeah. I went to Geneva. So that was the case. And it was behind barriers by the time it was a public day, which is when I normally get there. So it was on the basis of having seen that, having taken loads of pictures of it, okay, having been generally an annoying fanboy as I am. So there was that. And then we got that. And then we got the invite to the, that must have been starting November. End of November. No, start of November was the half day at Silverstone.
Yeah.
Sometime in the winter was the half day at Silverstone, and that, no, it can't be, because we had to have the paper signed by the 31st of October. So it must have been early October. We had to have all the paperwork signed and stuff by the 31st of October with our dealer of choice. By then, and that's when we had to put down a deposit, which by that point is kind of non-refundable at that point.
Okay.
Well, I'm sure it would be refundable because there is actually a waiting list for them.
Right, so it was quite a short... It was only talking a month or two. between initial to...
I might have my dates completely messed up, because it has taken about six months at least.
What we're saying... Well, yeah, it is up to now. But what we're saying... Well, it's nearly up to now. But what we're saying is it was quite a short period of time from indicating your initial interest to, yes, I'm very serious about this.
Yes.
Please, I'll take one. Okay.
And then, essentially, I've been the first UK... As far as to my knowledge, I've been the first UK buyer to drive a production spec one on the road.
Okay.
To my knowledge, which is quite scary.
What about the car and the tech and stuff? Come on.
Shall we start off with the... Okay, right. Let's talk about what's cool about this. And then... because really it's the engineering that's particularly cool.
Let's wonder which way he's going to talk about it then.
So that means I start off with the engineering, doesn't it? Because it's me. So the car has 1.8-litre 2ZR engine. 2ZR engine. This is I'm getting funny looks from across the road. That's the engine block. So that's the engine family in Toyota speed. Right. That's the same engine family as in the Prius and the CT200H, for example.
Okay.
It's a standard 1.8-litre engine from Toyota. This one, however, has a Magnussen Eaton supercharger strapped onto the top.
I won't ask you how superchargers work.
No, don't ask me how superchargers work.
No, it is
essentially forced induction driven off the crankshaft. Okay, so let's go no further than that. On the top. That makes it unique amongst the kind of small hot hatches, because generally these days it's everything's turbocharged. Mm-hmm. So a supercharger is quite unusual. You recognise the idea of that. You're going, hang on, that's a 1.8-litre supercharged charged engine. Is that not just the same as in the Elise? Because the power outputs are very similar. So it's 209 imperial brake horsepower, 212, if I remember correctly, metric.
Okay.
So a PS in there. And you think that's the same as an Elise. Well, the answer is the idea is the same, but actually it's different. And it's different for packaging reasons, because it is a tiny little bonnet that it's got to fit under. And so does the extra intercooler, and so does the exhaust system to try and get the air back out of these tiny little engines. So it is slightly different. Again, talk about that when my chat with Stan as well. They've taken subframe from the hybrid and they mounted it on that because that's stiffer and that saved them a brace whenever they're stiffening up the body shell, because they've added a whole bunch of braces in there, both under the engine, both across the top of the strut towers, and also in the rear, linking back to where the suspension mounting points are at the bottom. It's McPherson front at the it's McPherson strut at the front, torsion beam at the rear. Traditional Yaris suspension, because I'm sure you're all as aware of how that is and works as I am.
Yes, Alan, we are, is the quick answer.
So the springs are about 30 mil shorter than stock. The car itself sits 24 mil lower. The extra 6 mil, in case you care, is made up because the wheels are slightly larger and the tyres are slightly larger. It's Sachs Performance shocks. Those are ones that are normally really used in racing setups. So these are serious, serious road shock absorbers.
Okay, so they've the parts they are specking are...
These are not cheap parts.
Are proper performance parts. Oh, yeah. I mean, we're not... Again, this is reinforcing the idea and the thing I was asking the earlier. Message. This is not a cheap attempt at a marketing ploy.
I've only just started.
Okay.
So the supercharger is a Magnussen Eaton unit. So it is the proper... It's not an Eaton-style supercharger. It is a proper one there. The alloy wheels, 17-inch alloys, one at each corner, unsurprisingly. They could have fitted bigger ones, but they didn't want to. They wanted the compliance of that extra tyre sidewall, as well as that fitting smaller alloy wheels meant that it saved on unsprung mass. Once again,
so, high, you know, level of attention to detail.
Yeah, so there's less unsprung mass for more and better corneriness. The thing is, it goes further than that, because they're not just, because they're 17-inch cast ones, they're not. They're 17-inch forged BBS alloys unique to the car. That saves about 1.6 kilos per corner. Total mass of this car is 1,000...
the tattoo on the inside of your wrist.
1,135 kilos, so that's about the same as an MX-5R, an MX-5-ish. And, as I said, 200-odd brake in there.
Okay.
Similarly, because we use smaller wheels, we've used smaller brake discs. So they're only 275 mil at the front. In fact, the front brake discs are actually smaller than the rear brake discs on this car. However, they are grooved and they have four-pot Advix calipers. Okay? It's that way. That's what they're doing to keep the weight down. It is ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Sorry, this is just a bit of a random question, but was this one person's pet project?
Not as far as I'm aware, no. This was not that anybody said.
Because it must be a small team, though, because the level of very detail implies that this has not been done by committee.
No. Listen to Stan in the interviews.
Okay.
He goes in a little bit more, because what's very unusual about this is that he's been driven from Europe, not driven by Japan, which is the way that these projects traditionally take place.
Mm-hmm.
This, off to the side, is the first ever vehicle that TMMF, so that's Toyota Motor Manufacturing France, that's the plant at Valenciennes, up near the Belgian border, has ever exported back to Japan.
All right, okay, wow. Ooh, no pressure.
No pressure. It's also, one of the reasons is because it's the only place in the world where they make the three-door Yaris hatch. Mm.
Okay.
And so hence, you know, if it was a five-door, then they would build it on the Vitz plant, Vitz line in Japan. But they haven't. They've made it in France here. So it's been led by Toyota Europe, based in Belgium.
So is that all the tech stuff?
Or no, because there's also a Torsen limited slip diff in there. The other thing to remember, that this has actually been squeezed into a seven-year-old platform. Okay, I know it only had a facelift last year.
Yaris is that old?
That one, the Mark III, is kind of the same platform. Mark III, essentially the same metalwork. Mark IV and Mark III, it's a fairly hefty facelift, but it was plastic nonetheless to give it the kind of beaky in those.
Okay.
The Yaris is that old. And it's small. It is a smidge bigger than a Mark 1 Golf GTI, if you want to imagine how big that is. So even though it's a Yaris and it's B-segment, it's still slightly bigger than the original Golf GTI was.
So is this then, if you're going to throw out that comparison,
mm-hmm.
is this hearkening back to, and maybe park this question for later, but is this hearkening back to the original GTI and original idea of a hot hatch?
Very much so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Another couple of bits and pieces about the exterior. I mentioned that the rear spoiler, which is black, is, I mentioned the colour on purpose, is actually generates downforce. You don't get an option. The only colour you get is white, and that's just white. With black roof, black wing mirrors. There are red accent strips on the front, and the more aggressive front and rear bumpers, which are unique to the GRMN. Also unique to the GRMN is the central exhaust at the back, which was one of those, came from the crayon department.
What we see generally is there's like a framing.
The trapezoidal frame, yeah.
There's a frame, but that's not pretending to be the exhaust, is it?
No, the exhaust is slightly smaller and inside. It's kind of ovoid.
Yeah.
By the time it reaches that point. What we're
basically saying is it's not fake exhaustery.
No.
That's not pretending to be the exhaust, that's just a frame round
it. Yes. Because that's the way it is on the rally ones.
Because anyone who listens to us know we hate a fake exhaust.
It's not just a fake exhaust. The exhaust is there, it's just framing the exhaust, and the exhaust is a ridiculous diameter right the way back. To package that and to keep the diameter as free flowing as possible to get the air back out again, then they've actually got rid of a catalytic converter along the way, so it's already partially decatted on the way. But they've had to put in a slightly bigger muffler to make it reasonable around town, and that was the difference between the prototypes we drove and the prototypes that, some of the magazines drove at the Nürburgring, and the production ones. That was about the only difference that they were going to make, based on the feedback from journalists from across Europe.
Okay.
It's three door only. There is only one option. Do you want the stickers or do you not want the stickers? The stickers.
I think you'd go for the stickers, wouldn't you?
Well, it's no cost.
No, and forgetting the cost side of things, though.
I went for the stickers.
If you don't go for the stickers, it doesn't stand out mega unless you are paying particular attention, don't think.
Yeah, and because I'm a show-off, I wanted the stickers. Most people have gone for the stickers.
Okay.
Is the answer there. Inside, they've done some bits and pieces, but it retains, as I said about the Toyotanus, it retains the standard Yaris stuff. So there's a boot, which is boot size and shape.
So they've kept costs down by not throwing in a brand new dash or...
Well, yes, but they've also made life difficult for themselves. Part of it is because this is built on the standard line, along with the others. You hear that when we talk to standard. Mm-hmm. There's a Yaris being made every 63 seconds in France. These are built on the same line.
Oh, they can wheel the spanner quickly out.
Yeah, it takes 45... They've got the same 45 seconds to install the power plant unit from this car as they do if they're doing a 1 litre. Yeah.
Okay.
So despite the fact this is almost twice the size, plus a supercharger, plus the differential on the bottom, plus everything else, it still has to all be slotted in. The reason that this car doesn't have extended, one of the reasons that this car doesn't have wider wheel arches is there is not space in the factory on the line for extended wheel arches. So it can't have them. It only just fits between the standard machinery. They actually had to run a prototype shell down the plant to check that it was all going to fit for clearances. And that included like the bumpers front and rear and the spoiler and all that kind of thing to make sure they weren't going to catch on things.
So when a manufacturer, or in this instance Toyota, develops a new car or a special edition type thing... There are constraints that are not just monetary.
No.
Obviously monetary.
Physical constraints.
But they are physical constraints because that will impact other parts of the business.
Yes.
And the practicality of this, of that vehicle actually becoming a thing that can be sold.
So there are specific differences. There is a little separate line bit, parts, for things like the roof is black. It's not just black vinyl. It is actually sprayed.
Mm-hmm.
So they've had to make some changes around the paint shop to enable that to be possible. So there's two stages of painting going on. They've got a separate bit for the decals. They've got a separate bit for some of that stuff. But everything else, like seat installation, all that kind of thing, that has to work in harmony with the standard production line.
Even though they're going to be, I presume it's different seats.
Yes.
Front seats, anyway.
Yes. Yeah,
I presume the back is the same with the same.
Well, yeah, but it's different. But it's a different upholstery. Yeah, it's three seat. There's three-point seat belts in the back. You've got a little bit less legroom because the unique front seats are a bit different. So the seats are by Toyota Bushoku. It's part of Toyota, who specialise in race seats and stuff. So they're not Recaros. They're not Kobos. They're similar. And what's interesting about them is that they are intended for driving on the road. So if you get into many hot hatches, and I'm thinking of one from a brand that begins with H, it's also Japanese, but built in Switzerland. Yeah. Then you get in, certainly the previous generation, you got in awesome, awesome seats, but your head only fitted against the headresty bit properly if you're wearing a helmet.
Mm-hmm.
These seats are not like that. They are the same single piece, but your head sits comfortably against it without wearing a helmet.
Okay.
They are designed for fast road driving. They're also covered in not just suede, but ultra suede, which I think is a way of... I think it's a non-trade... Or it's a different trademark from Alcantara. Okay. Right. It's of the same family of finishes, I think.
Feels similar.
Feels similar to, yeah. What else have we done inside? Well, most of it's very, very... black. Most of it's very standard. You might have read other reviews and people commenting that the dash feels a bit cheap, etc., 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 for a car that costs that much. Well, yeah, but it feels all right for a car that costs £15,000, and that's what it is essentially.
Yeah, but I've never understood that. There are no hot hatches that strip out the dash and put something different in.
No. No,
the point is...
Well, that this that's not quite true. This is the Renault Halo. Did for a while.
This is the Halo version of that model.
Yeah.
So I therefore, agree. That isn't going to change. And anyone who thinks it ever would is living in fantasy land, in my opinion.
The only car I can think of that ever did that was a one generation of Renault Clio, where higher Clio models got a softer dash than lower Clio models. But you could still get the Clio Renault Sport Cup. If you went for the Cup pack, you got the cheap dash because it was lighter than the expensive posh dash, which you could also get. That's the only example.
But if you're driving a hot hatch, what does the dash
Who
matter?
Cares?
Is another point.
Yeah, it's
me.
Not a touch point. I don't drive around with my hands pressed on
you
the
dashboard. You are paying for the performance and you are paying for the specialness of that.
And I'm paying for stuff like the GT86 steering wheel, that's the same one as in the Subaru equivalent, which is 30 mil smaller diameter than the standard Yaris steering wheel. I'm paying for the little red marker on the leather at the top of it. I'm paying for special gear
that because I'm a child.
Yeah, me too. They've also shoved loads of little GR badges around the place. So there's ones on the seats, there's one on the steering wheel, and all places in the startup animation. It's got a special GRMN startup animation between the dials and the binnacle.
Is it press button? Thing.
It's what press button?
Is it press button start?
Yes. There's GR logo on that. Yes.
Start stop button. Oh, start stop button. Again, the child in me is very happy.
Oh, and it's great because it goes. Bah, 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 bah. It's total, yes. Total nerd. It's fantastic. Okay. One thing about the interior, you know, it's got sat nav, it's got dual zone climate control, believe it or not. Because it's a tiny car.
Ah, right,
but it does have, you know, that's...
That opens this car up to...
Oh, yeah, to many more buyers.
Yes.
Absolutely. It must just have been standard. The one thing I would say is that I find that the seats were slightly high and a little bit odd. But that said...
Is that compared to Johnny the Yaris?
Yeah, it is a bit. Well, is that compared to
a traditional Yaris seat?
It's kind of compared to Johnny the Yaris, which
is
really
not very
fair,
is it?
No, it's not very fair. No, it isn't. You're right. But it is, you know...
For something that has to work on the production line in the space of time that is allotted to stick a seat in.
Yes, that's absolutely right. And that is very much the case. So,
sorry, I've suddenly become the one defending the Yaris here, and
great.
You're the one who's put the money down.
It's great. But I think you should get hold of a hybrid one at some point. The seating position is a Yaris seating position. If you're familiar with Yaris seating positions, and I am, because I'm very, very sad, and this will be my sixth, then yes. That's not counting the quarter one in front. Anyway, shall we have a little break from me getting all excitable? Well, possibly a break from me being all excitable. And shall we listen to my interview with Stan?
Yes.
Because...
let's have somebody who is on the other side of this, who's been deeply involved. Deeply, deeply involved.
Yeah, from
in
day one.
In making it be a thing that you could throw your money at.
Yes, absolutely. So let's have a little word from him. We recorded it. I recorded it in the... Kind of, it was a converted pit garage, so acoustics were not a big deal when they were designing this for the Yaris.
That's very selfish of them.
I know, it's terrible. I must speak to the people.
I'm jolly cross,
something like that. So anyway, here it is. Enjoy, and I'm about to talk about driving in about 10 minutes' time. I'm joined by Stan Peters, who is the European Technical Program Manager.
Mm-hmm.
For the Yaris GRMN. Stan, true. Can you start off by explaining just what is a European Technical Program Manager, please?
Good. So actually, we are based in R&D, so that's where my division is. R&D means we are the head of the development. In specific, that means, of course, you're in charge to develop the whole vehicle, specifically in Europe, so with European suppliers, European factory as well.
Yeah.
So that would be the factory in France in this case. Mm-hmm. And taking all the decisions in that one. But it also means that we are the coordination function between all stakeholders. That means the stylists talk to us, the product planning divisions talk to us, the marketing guys talk to us, And we then actually centralize all the decisions and also deliver what you would call the chief engineer, which is the final decision taker. So that's what my department is doing. It's a whole coordination role and therefore also the decision role.
Right, that's pretty serious stuff.
Absolutely. it's extremely interesting. We are, of course, that also means that we're involved from start till end because, of course, you start with concept, you start with business cases, everything. You start with style proposals. You then develop the vehicle as, let's say, moving on into the schedule. And then, as a next step, you need to make sure that what you have developed can be produced by the factories and by the suppliers. And then you're actually checking that what has been produced is also according to what you were expecting.
It's what you actually wanted originally.
Absolutely.
Isn't it?
And that is our role. And that was my role specifically for the Iris GRMN.
So how, this is a loaded question, and I know there's only one way you can answer it, but how well do you think Yaris GRMN is so far delivering on what you guys were expecting at Toyota?
It is maybe one of the few projects where I can be really with pride say that we have been delivering exactly what we have been requested to deliver. It had to be radical. It had to be the vehicle that puts Gazoo Racing as a brand on the European market, that it can't be ignored, it can't be neglected. We are there and we are bringing a fun car, which is exactly what it's supposed to be.
Yeah, well, I've got another few hours of driving it ahead of me. I've driven out from central Barcelona out to where we are right now at Parc Motor, just about 60 kilometres out of Barcelona. And I've done a whole bunch of track driving this morning. And I know I'm hugely biased because regular listeners know that I have my money down for one of these. But I find it's great on the track, on the motorways and stuff. And I'm really looking forward to hitting some big roads later on and learning that stuff.
And I'm really happy that you feel exactly what we felt a little bit less than 2 years ago when we first put the concept car together, actually.
Yeah.
And it was a big surprise because, of course, you can't bring all the numbers together as you always do in the beginning of a project. And then you'll see what the first concept says and then you start improving it. But actually, we've had this feeling, this major smile on our faces as from driving it the very first day.
Yeah.
With even when the suspension wasn't matching the engine and so on, where still we had seats that were still, let's say, not really doing its job or not enough for this kind of vehicle.
But you were falling out of them.
But yeah, they were basically just smashing us against the door because you could do so high cornering speeds with this vehicle. It's like, wow. And we knew that we had golden hands, and so we had to protect it during the development.
Yeah.
We had to convince everybody that it's worthwhile putting down the development money, because it's a huge budget to develop these kind of things, that it's really worthwhile and that it really is a vehicle that will be recognized as the Gazoo Racing face in Europe, which was the ultimate target.
Fantastic. So, I mean, you mentioned a bit of the development and a bit of tying together suspension and motor and that kind of thing. So, shall we talk about the car itself for a moment or two?
Sure.
Because, I mean, the headline thing that people are going to see is that it's of course, it's got that supercharged 1.8-litre engine in it. But it's been a bit more complex than just taking the motor from a Prius and then sticking a supercharger on and just shoving it in the front of the car, hasn't it?
Absolutely. So, as you know, we have been working with Lotus as well. They are using a similar package in their Elise.
I was going to let you mention the L word. I was trying to be good.
They're making fine cars, so there's no way that we should hide actually that we're working together. And even more because Toyota is supplying all the gearboxes and engines for years and years to Lotus. Not even this 1.8 or 1.6 on Elise, but also the V6s on the Evoras and so on. So we have a huge collaboration already. And before you can actually supply parts or to one another, because they are now supplying back to us, actually.
Yes.
You have to have technical background. You have to share know-how. Mm-hmm. And that is why I knew already that this was a potential solution since 2011, 2010, let's say, when they developed the supercharger with Magnussen. We knew the dimensions. We knew the technology. And so when I was requested to develop a concept car, this was one of my solutions. Now, we had several options. I presented them. They all go with a business case. They all go with a development lead time and with a project which is going from completely impossible to still impossible, but let's still try it. and in the end, we've selected that solution. Yeah. So there were various opportunities, let's say, and this was for me the most balanced one for several reasons. Because it's available and it has a very small packaging, which obviously for an Elise, they suffer from the same criteria and the same requirements. Now, you're asking that it is much more than simply putting the engine in, and that is indeed what I would like to focus on, is that even though they have similar products, similar outputs, we had to re-engineer everything from start to
finish. Well, this is what you were saying. We got a presentation earlier on. And you were talking about the packaging and just how tight it is. And you gave a good example.
Mm. It is, actually. So, for example, we even changed the engine head just to make sure that in our production line, so this car is still inline produced, already one of the big differences with Lotus, for example.
Yeah.
We are producing a Yaris every 63 seconds. 24-hour and 24-hour. And we are producing this GRMN at the same line, so at the same pace. So imagine installing an engine in such tiny engine bay in a good 45 seconds. That is, of course, a different requirement. And this is how quick it goes.
You've just answered something that I was going to ask you slightly to the side, because I know that some parts are finished on a separate little bit of line. Mm. And I thought that the engine was going to be one of those bits. I didn't realize that not only were you saying earlier on you can barely fit two fingers around any Absolutely. Part of the engine bay, but that it's being done on the same line with the same machinery, essentially, as the 1 liters and the much smaller 1.5s for the hybrids.
And this is exactly how it goes. So imagine if you only have two finger space and you need to push up whole system, because it's so nice. The French call it le mariage.
Oh yeah, the marriage.
Yeah. The marriage of engine and vehicle. And they're actually pushing from down onward. They're pushing the engine into the body. And so it's a very big wobbly. You need to lift up the engine over your head, over 2 meters high. And you can only wobble it around, let's say, for a good two finger space. That's actually where we had to work with. So it was an amazing experience, and I'm very proud that our manufacturing guys were capable of doing that.
I was amazed. So I got the press pack yesterday, folks, and I was reading through it, and I didn't realize that as much. I mean, I've just learned a bit more. That as much was done on the line, and that actually prototypes had to be passed down the line to make sure that there was clearance for them around the kit. And all that kind of thing. So it's one of those things about this car. It's simply the depth of engineering that's gone into it. And you've already mentioned changing the head. But it's the actual body shell's been stiffened as well, hasn't it?
True. So rather than like other manufacturers could do when you start with a full new generation and you can take this kind of high performance requirements into account when you start from scratch, we had to start from a vehicle that was already built, that was already developed, but we still had to improve it. So we couldn't do major changes, but still we didn't want to compromise anything. Still, we want to make it radical. We want to make it really one of the best cars on the market. So what we've done is actually we've engineered together with Japan, because they have a lot of input done through motorsports, actually. They are using the normal Yaris there locally on rally. So we had already a lot of feedback, and we knew what works and what doesn't. And that's why we've added in total 5 different braces, one on the top, 4 on the bottom, that actually make key difference and make actually the front and the rear axles work together. So that's really, for me, one of the magnificent items. Together with the suspension, also Zax as well. So Zax is our supplier. They are well known. They're part of the ZF company, but Zax is the shock absorber brand.
Yes.
And on top of that, we were allowed to use Zax Performance. It's normally only for motorsports purposes, mm-hmm. Because it's that expensive and that good.
Yeah.
But due to working with lower quantities, they were agreeing that, okay, let's use Zax Performance. And we lowered the vehicle, stiffened it on the floor, and with the result that it's a complete different vehicle compared to a conventional Yaris, which is a very comfortable one, but not as performing, obviously, as this one.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. The other part you talked about earlier was the exhaust and packaging that, because, of course, the more powerful engine needs more air, and forced induction sucks in even more air. But of course, all of that has to come back out the end of it, and that's it. You were saying that was another fun challenge for you.
Absolutely, and yet another example why our product is completely different than what Lotus is doing.
Mm.
Lotus has a rear engine, means very short exhaust. You just put a big main muffler under it, and that's it. We have like more than 3 meter exhaust length that we have to cover, which is creating a huge back pressure.
Uh-huh.
And as you know, back pressures means bad evacuation of exhaust gases. You can't boost the intake air as much as you would like to, hence having no power. So it means I had to restart completely, but of course respecting the space available on the floor. So I was almost like shopping in our exhaust catalogs and said, actually the best thing we could do is put the best catalyst available from Lexus, from a 2-liter turbo, increasing the bore diameter of the exhaust line until you really reach the millimeters space between the body and the exhaust. We've done then this beautiful central exhaust, which is quite unique actually, because it does allow me to balance back pressure noise, but also adding more sound.
And
I'm not sure, but how did you feel about the sound when driving on the track?
I love the sound. On the track it's fantastic because it goes up and it makes a kind of roary noise.
Mm.
And of course, being a big kid on the way out here, there were a couple of tunnels. It was a case of dropping down a couple cogs and nailing it. And it just sounds fantastic. It's not the full rally car because it doesn't pop on the overrun or anything like
true.
That.
True.
But it makes the noise when you power it. And this is something I was going to talk about later, but I'll cover it now anyway, and I'll do it in front of Stan, is that my big worry with this, because regular listeners know that one's coming, was just how noisy it was going to be on the motorway, because I'd driven out of Silverstone, and you get no idea of it. So that was being my big worry. So I drove this morning, and I was amazed at how civilized it is when you're sitting at speed limits ish and how grown up it is for that kind of thing. But then you get here to the track and you nail it and you take it up to the 7,000 ish red line.
Absolutely.
And it sounds fab, that supercharger noise and also the sound of the exhaust coming pretty much straight through is just great.
Well, I'm very happy that you do recognize our efforts actually, because it was one of the issues as well, that how far can we go actually? Even if a car is radical, we are still expecting people to drive it on a regular basis on highway, and where basically everybody would complain if it's permanently noisy.
Yeah,
it would destroy our character as well. And that's what we could do with this exhaust and intake system, actually, because it is a combination, actually, that it only acts on the throttle. It means if you stay on a normal pace, the noise will go away, or the sound will go away, and if you step on the throttle, it's back, and it gives you a good feedback on what's going on.
And just for the benefit of Dow folks, it's worth mentioning that there are no modes.
you get it, this is it. There's no buttons, there's nothing like that. It is all pure engineering with no synthesis going
absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. No artificial items done. We also tuned it. And that's also one of the big differences with normal vehicles, where you have to tune a vast variety of engines and tires and suspensions and even flavors of customers, because we all know that a guy in Portugal might require different driving styles than one in Scandinavia.
Yeah.
With this one, it's pure. It's authentic. One variation, one wheel size, one specific tire. But our goal was, we have now this opportunity to engineer only one variation, but then we have to make the best out of it. And that's exactly how it
is. There is one little difference you've made for the ones that we're driving on track here. Do you want to explain what that is and why?
True. There was kind of a little surprise of me for you, because we haven't done it on Silverstone. We haven't done it on the Nordschleife, when back in July the first journalist could have a pre-drive of a prototype.
Yeah.
Today we've offered a track drive with the Potenza 11S. It's a high-performance tire. It is, unfortunately, not road legal in Europe, so it's not homologated. But it's actually just for us, and we haven't developed it even. It's just a selection of us, because we know Bridgestone very well and we know this tire very well. And it was a message for us to you and your colleague journalist, actually, saying that, and our potential customers, that actually to have the most fun on a track on a regular basis, basically the only thing you need to do is change a tire. And that's it. You don't need to upgrade the brakes. You don't need to stop playing with tuning or suspension tuning, engine tuning, or whatever tuning you had in mind. Mm-hmm. It's just upgrade your tires to your flavor, actually, and then you're ready to have a go. I do have to say, why are we not recommending any tire for this? Uh-huh. Is that we believe that customers which have this high requirement, this high performance requirement to go on regularly on the track, we are confident that they will pick the tire of their choice. Mm-hmm. Because every tire will change the character of the car. One character might suit the other one better than the other one. And that's why we leave it up to the specialized drivers, actually, to select the tire of their choice. Having said that, I still believe that the Potenza RE50, mm-hmm. where this vehicle is homologated with, is a fantastic tire to do its job at all times. That means it is good in cold and wet as it is on dry and hot. And that's why this is a tire where we tune the car for. This is a tire we know that all customers will be satisfied. But then again,
different people want different things
different
for that
people,
last kind of 10% of
absolutely. Absolutely.
Stan, there's so much. I could stand here and talk to you all day, but I know that there's a car probably waiting in the pit lane for me. So we're going to end it there, but thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure.
My pleasure.
So I hope you enjoyed that. I thought that was something that was worth including. I'd met Stan before at Silverstone. I think that what he said was really what he knew was so interesting, and it was so great to get the opportunity to speak to him again, and this time be able to share some of the cleverness with you guys. I mean, the whole barely room for two fingers around, and it has to be lifted above people's heads and to fit in the car and all sorts of stuff. I think hopefully
no, that's great, because it actually helps. I mean, it gave me an idea of the level of thought that has to go into these things to make them reality. It's what I was saying before the interview about it's not just monetary. It's not bean counters with a spreadsheet, and I love a spreadsheet, as everyone knows.
Freak.
It's not just that dictates how a car comes out at the other end. It's the whole process. Mm-hmm. So it was really, I found it very interesting and fascinating to hear how they had to think about all these other things as well. So that was great. And I'm, you know, it's the first for the show that we've done something like that, and I'm glad that you did do it.
Yeah, so am I.
Right, come on then. Because I think really what people would probably want to know is, what are the specifics of the boot size, litres,
No, no, we're not going to talk about that. That's rubbish. Let's talk about the driving.
Oh, okay, go on.
Look it up on the internet.
It's a hot hatch. Go on then. I suppose we have to talk about driving at some point.
Yes, yeah. So, it's a little car with a short wheelbase. That's not going to come.
So it's going to be awful.
Oh, terrible. Terrible.
Something you're not used to.
Something I'm not used to. Yeah, absolutely not used to. So we got a chance to drive it on track and on the road. My big worry before going into this wasn't how it was going to drive on the track or how it was going to drive on little wiggly roads. It's that I intend on mine being my daily driver. At least to begin with.
It needs to fit the bill of it's 10:30 at night. You've just been away for 3 days working hard. You need to get somewhere after getting off a flight.
Yeah.
You're a little bit tired.
Mm-hmm.
Please do that without making this difficult, hard, painful, or an event.
And just to highlight something else that was in the interview there are no mode buttons in this car. It is as it is. There is no sport mode. There is no comfort mode.
So there is one mode, and that mode is everything.
That mode is everything.
Okay.
I think that's what makes it so awesome.
Hiya, Toyota. No pressure.
Yeah, no, don't make this hard for yourselves or anything.
You could have put a button in it with at least one other option.
So I was so pleased because I drove it first because I was paired up with Tim Pitt from Motoring Research. Or we paired ourselves up, to be honest.
Sorry, Tim.
Yeah, I've apologised many times already. So I was keen to drive first because I wanted to know what it was going to be like in the slightly crummy traffic coming out of Barcelona, sitting in stop-start traffic and heading up to the track. I was actually more worried about that. It's fine. It's a bit buzzy. Let's be honest. It's a small hot hatch. It's not going to ride like a Rolls Royce, and it's not going to...
How far was it off the normal Yaris in normal traffic, trying to do normal
I don't
driving.
Want to talk about normal Yaris. What I want to say, compare it actually is to the MX-5 in this situation, because it's my current daily.
Okay.
It was quieter than the MX-5.
And it's been a show since we've mentioned the MX-5. Yeah.
No, but I've been very good. No, what I found was it was pretty tight. There was a bit of exhaust going on, a little bit of drone. I don't think it's going to be bad on long journeys. It's not to that stage. But other than that, it was incredibly planted.
How many gears has it got?
6.
Okay, so it should manual. Just nicely cruise along at a motorway speed.
It does, yes, it does. And it nicely cruises along at maybe slightly higher than motorway speeds here in the UK as well.
Okay.
With plenty of oomph as well. You kind of have to drop it a couple of gears, but then it will pull up.
Right.
It will pull well, and it will pull with much character.
So it was easy to drive through the rush hour-y type traffic?
It was light clutch, light gear shift, light steering, electric power steering.
And then when you took it on the motorway, again, that wasn't an issue.
Just fine. The only thing, do you know what the only issue I have with it? And this is so not hot hatchy, okay, everyone will say, well, it's a ridiculous thing to be grumbling about. Didn't have cruise control.
Ooh, why not?
I would imagine it was the difficulty of marrying that engine package
with the rest of
the existing electrics, with the steering wheel from the GT86, with the controls. That none of these things were ever designed to work together.
Okay.
So I suspect that has a lot to do with it.
Right, let's speak to you 6-8 months down the line.
Yeah.
And see if that is an issue.
Well, you'll notice I did word that my initial intention...
only potential issue I can see so far from everything you've said...
Yeah.
...is that.
Yeah.
Because that does not fit well with the 10:30 at night after the scenario I just painted.
On the other hand, I quite often when I'm doing that already, I don't necessarily use my cruise control in that situation anyhow. So I should be okay. Where that actually bothers me is when I'm doing longer runs into France.
Okay.
On the autoroute, where it is clear enough and quiet enough.
Well.
But hey,
all right,
that's a ridiculous... That is not a use case for this car. It's quite niche. Okay, I absolutely am on top of that.
All right. So, what was it like on the track then? So, you've said it's.
So we started off on the track.
You did the road, and it didn't It did everything you hoped it would do.
So
that was
the first bit. So later on in the day, we took it to finish off road stuff. Took it on the wiggly roads up towards Montserrat and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Including a tarmac stage from the WRC.
How's the handbrake hold up after several corners?
Yeah, we didn't do that. We were good boys.
Okay.
It's great. What's the steering is direct. It's not particularly heavy, funnily enough, given the fact it's quite a small car and it's got that electric assistance which can deal with it. Sharp ripples, expansion joints and things. It was a fairly harsh when you hit it, but it was absolutely perfectly damp. So it was stiff as heck, but not in a bad way.
Mm-hmm.
You knew that it had been engineered to be like that. It wasn't just uncomfortable and couldn't cope. That was different.
Oh, okay.
But naturally, we took it easy on speed bumps and stuff like that for that kind of reason. Seats, absolutely great. And they're, turning brilliant. Just power delivery, because it's a supercharger, and this is true on road and on track, because it's a supercharger, you're not waiting for boost for pressure to build before boost comes in. There's no lag, there's nothing like that, because it's engine driven. So the really linear torque curve is great.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really great in there. On track, as Stan said in the interview, then it wasn't on road tyres on the track, and you can kind of understand why, because these things are getting beat around all the time. On the other hand...
Did people mutter about that?
There was a bit of muttering about that. The other hand, the idea, as it was explained to us, the idea was to say, look, this is the kind of car that's going to appeal to people who are going to take it to tracks and to track days. What we wanted to show off is just how it handles when you have a stickier track bias tyre. They actually said, you know, people who are buying this are the kind of people that will probably have a tyre preference. So people will be familiar. No, seriously.
No, I know you. This is what I'm laughing at.
Yeah. So, you know, they're saying, well, is it? Do you want to use an R888? Do you want to use this? Do you want to? And this was discussed at Silverstone as well. It's like, so, look, we're giving you a sample. We know that this one's a Bridgestone. It's not legal on the road yet, but it gives you an idea of what it's like if you put a stickier tyre on. And we think that if you're even a sort of relatively regular track day user, that's all you need to do to this car is to change the tyres, just to make it a bit better in that situation. But it said, you know, you could equally use the standard REO50s, Potenza REO50s on track as well. But, you know, they degrade a bit more quickly. Pick your tyre. We're happy with any of them. The original show car had Toyos on, by the way.
Okay.
Original one. So, but they said, you know, we've got this. To be honest, so one of the reasons they partner with Bridgestone, but also the REO50s are available right across Europe and in Japan. So it's a safe bet for them because they know it's sold everywhere. And if you just want to replace like for like, then that's what you can do.
Okay.
Okay. Great thing about driving it on track. So I always have a fear in these things that I don't want to be that guy. I don't.
Okay, how did that go?
I forgot about it. I forgot about it. I was having so much fun. I mean, the laps probably got slower. They certainly got more ragged the more I did. But just because you're pushing it in further.
Were you with the driver or were you on your own?
I was on my own, which was terrifying. Yeah, but they had cones out, thank goodness. Some people were way handier than me. Most people were way handier than me. It was great. As I say, I was having so much fun. I was waiting late, hitting those four caliper front brakes, and then just getting on the gas far too early. The diff just pulling you straight through. It was great. It wasn't the most refined thing I've ever driven, but I think that a lot of that was down to my driving, to be perfectly honest. I had a fantastic time. Fantastic good. Time. And on the road as well, the diff. You could feel the diff coming, but it wasn't intrusive. It certainly didn't yank the wheel one way or the other. But there were some corners where you're going into the shade, there was wet, there was dry. It was quite cold for such high-performance tyres. And you could just feel it just a little bit. Just making sure that you could get straight out of that corner again and that you were on the line you wanted to be on. Absolutely cracking.
Cool. Okay, then. So, I dread to ask this. In conclusion, Alan, what did you think?
It's all right.
In case anyone is not quite clear.
Passable, I think. That's all I'm prepared to say, passable. No, I...
Do you still feel you have made the right decision?
My decision was confirmed on this trip, and I knew, I was absolutely certain I had made the right decision. It took me about a week before I stopped grinning once I was back. Okay? I've been thinking about it a lot since because I am that sad. It's a
all mocking hike. Aside, that is good to hear.
Yeah, tell me about it. But it's a proper hot hatch. There's no pretense. There's nothing in there which is fake.
Mm-hmm.
It's the stuff's real
been added.
Deal.
It's been added for a purpose.
It's been added for a purpose. But what I mean by nothing's fake is I want to say it's an exercise in mechanical engineering. The diff's mechanical. There's nothing to help. There's no auto throttle plip for gear changes. There's no modes for things. It's
for driving.
This is it. This is the car for driving. And you okay. only buy this if you're a certain form of nutter.
Person, yes.
Of nutter like myself. And yet they have sold them all. And I think that's what you have to take away from it, is that there are enough of us who care about driving. That there's a
waiting list.
That there's a market for it, that there's a waiting list. Now, I'm told there will not be another one of... They will not do a Cleo Williams on us. Okay? There will not be another Geraint of this statement of intent coming along for the next few years. I think that the GR badge, without the MN, will appear on other cars soonish. I think GRMN, I think, is going to be special stuff. I've got a funny feeling that's going to be Supra. You saw the stuff from Auto Express.
You hope it's Supra.
You would hope it's Supra, yeah. Nobody's confirmed that. No matter how many times people from Toyota were asked, they made politely deferred and said, you obviously have far more information than we do then. So we shall see what happens. But brilliant. I am so chuffed. And that's hugely biased. So before rounding up, because we've waffled on an awful lot in this episode. I'm slightly sorry, but not totally sorry about that.
Sorry, but not sorry.
Yeah, sorry, not sorry. quick thanks to Toyota, obviously, for inviting me along. Thanks to Scott, Erica, Matt, Richard, and co. For that, and company, and stuff. And everyone else I met there. And Tim, obviously, for putting up for me, being a total fanboy all day. I must have been completely insufferable, and he was polite right to the very end. So, rounding up, don't forget that between now and next time, you can give us any feedback. Tell me what a complete moron I am. And share your thoughts for the show at Motoring Podcast on Twitter and on Instagram, on Facebook, and on the contact page of motoringpodcast.com, which is the hub of all our activities. Don't forget to leave a review and a rating on iTunes or however your podcast app lets you do such a thing, because it really does matter. Andrew, what's the best way to get in touch with you?
Best way to get in touch with me is via Twitter. If you search for Crack Windscreen, you will find me there. And Alan, if people don't think that getting in touch with you via Motoring Podcast is quite personal enough, what would be the best way they could do that?
Well, they can get down close and personal with me at Twitter again, at AJP Bradley. That's BRADLEY. We'll be back before very long. But until then, I've been Alan Bradley.
I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.